So we begin Sefer Yonah in our Nachyomi. What better time than before Yom HaKippurim? So we know that the book is an extraordinary book. There's older versions of the Seder of Tanakh in which Yonah was not included in the Treyasar. It was a book that was emitted on its own, and there were only 11 in the what we now call Treyasar. But its personality is such that it's extremely different. In other words, it doesn't describe as Nevi'is usually does. It doesn't describe what it is that a Navi does from the outside. It doesn't describe as it does in in Iyov, where we have clearly what's meant to be a description, a conceptual description. It somehow straddles the normal Nevi'is and the conceptual books in which it's meant to explore something. We have the sense, and the Mefarshim all raise this problem, that it isn't really about Yonah's shlichut to Nineveh, and that's because, as the Mefarshim point out, there is no record in any of the other Sfarim of a book that is miyuchat specifically for the Umes HaElah. And even though we do have masa that is given over about places among the Umes HaElah, not only was it never the subject of an entire book, but it was also clear-cut in its implications for Yisrael. It was part of an overall approach to what was happening in history that Yisrael should know. Here it's very unclear. What is the purpose of the book? And we know that we use the book. Chazal actually would kovea the book to the point where, whether it's on Yom Kippur, whether it's on a Tainis Tzibur, as the Gemara brings in Ta'anit, you're supposed to have a zaken that speaks about, take a look what happened in Nineveh, and it doesn't say that Vayar Elokim et Sakam v'ta'anitam. It says at Ba'aseyem, and so forth, and we use it somehow as a dogma of teshuva. Because of that, people assume that we read Yonah and Yom HaKippurim in order for it to be a dogma of teshuva. The normal explanation of why it is that Yonah did not want to go through with this, according to many of the Midrashim, the Farshim, as Rashi himself brings here, is the simple meaning in the opening of the book, even though it's clearly not what it says at the end of the book, and we'll have to talk about that in paragraph V, is that he felt that the Goyim, this is based on the Mechilta, he felt that Goyim are krovei teshuvahim. This occurs in many Midrashim, the Pirkei Rabbi Elazar. And since they're krovei teshuvah, they will respond, and that will end up being a kitrug on Yisrael, who do not respond, and therefore this will end up the gorim ra for Yisrael, and therefore I don't want to do it. Let's take that at face value for a moment. And notice the Mefarshim say, it seems ridiculous. If all of the things that happened to Yisrael, with all of the Nevi'im, throughout all of the Deiros, and the Nisim and Niflos that were done to us, and the number of times that we got into trouble, and finally fixed our ways, and were saved, and that if that didn't talk to people, how in the world was a ridiculous story about Nineveh in the middle of nowhere? At this point, Nineveh was not yet the great power that was going to come up against Yisrael and destroy Yisrael. How in the world were they supposed to take this seriously anyway? And if the bottom line is that we do use the Sefer, well, obviously we're not being kovea the use of the Sefer that should constantly be a maskeret avon for Yisrael on Yom HaKippurim. It's crazy. There's something wrong with the whole thing. It's obvious that it's supposed to be, if anything, a usable dogma, if you want, for some certain aspects of tshuva. But, such an extreme that we should use it one way, and that Yonah's ready to commit suicide by fearing the use of it that way, it's just illogical. Something more profound seems to be going on over here, and it is not at all clear that any of the Mefarshim have discovered it. So we really have to keep our minds open to what are the deeper elements of the book. Now, The opening pasuk, Vayidvar Hashem al Yonah ben Amitai Lemor, itself is a very important pasuk, because the identification of Yonah here as Yonah ben Amitai makes it almost 100% certain. I mean, it would be an absurd coincidence to say that this is a different Yonah ben Amitai. Yonah ben Amitai is mentioned earlier in Tanakh, and he's mentioned in an extremely surprising way, which Lamaisa ends up casting a lot of light on what is going on here. And I think that understanding the personality of Yonah is also going to be a very important part of understanding the Sefer itself. Yonah ben Amitai is mentioned as the one that had ultimately made it possible astoundingly, the last person in the world that you would have believed would have succeeded in expanding Yisrael to the point that it had never been expanded before, a last burst of the most amazing growth in Yisrael, which takes place at the end of Yeravam, the second Yeravam, the grandson of Yehu, who was Lichora an absolute no good. Vayaz harab in Hashem lo sar mikal kol chataot Yeravam ben Nevat asher echatiet Yisrael. And yet, remarkably, hu heshiv et gvul Yisrael milavo chamat ad yom ad yam ha'arava kidvar Hashem Elokei Yisrael asher diber biyad avdo Yonah ben Amitai hanavi asher migat chetre. So somehow or other, what appears to be absurd success of the closure of the period of the Aseret HaShvatim downfall, in which at the beginning we know that there was an attempt, let's get rid of Achav, we'll set up the Dorot of Yehu in order for there to be some kind of hope, and somehow none of that works. What happens is that at the end, these people and those Dorot are capable of destroying basically the leadership of Malchut Yehuda. So we had Bishana 15 Shana Lamatzia ben Yoash Melach Yehuda, Malach Yeravan ben Yoash Melach Yisrael b'Shamron, 41 Shana Vayas Hara, and yet nonetheless, this was the unbelievable Nevius that specifically Yonah had given at that time. And there's a reason why it was Yonah. And the reason that it was Yonah was because the entire story of this Malchus, even though his name isn't mentioned there, was Yonah. And the reason that he's called here Yonah ben Amitai is because of that. Yonah ben Amitai, according to the Zohar, and according to all of the Balei Kabbalah, use the Zohar, and see Ramazim of it in other Midrashim, is the child that Eliyahu brought back to life. And when Eliyahu brought him back to life, his mother used those words. And she said, "Now I know, Atazeh yadati ki ish Elohim ata udvar Hashem beficha emet." So that moment Eliyahu became connected with the concept of emet, and at when he was dying or departing the world, what he did was essentially give over the power, that power of Tchiyat HaMetim, to Elisha. And the koach that had been given over to him from the Nefashot of Nadav v'Avihu, again, we spoke about this in Chumash a lot, and that was the moment at which he was Pinchas, took over Nadav v'Avihu, and it becomes the Malach that becomes Eliyahu, Lati Lavo. And as it turns out, gave over that koach into that child who is, according to all of the Balei Kabbalah, Mashiach ben Yosef. So it's Yonah ben Amitai, carried within him the instinct of truth in Eliyahu's life. And we know that Eliyahu had many, many different identities, and he was different people. We spoke about this in Pinchas. And he is called the Emet Eliyahu here. That was his moment of truth. And that's the Eliyahu from Binyamin. There's many different aspects to Eliyahu. And remarkably, in that story, amazing story, where the woman comes to him, and her son has died, and he comes into the house, and he finds the boy dead. And his reaction is absolutely astounding. And it's so nogea yona. He says the most amazing words. He says, Hashem Elokai, Hagam ala almana asher nimit gorer ima areyot ala mitet b'na. What, is that bad enough the way you treat me? This is the way you have to treat even the people that treat me right? It's an amazing statement. So, Lamaisa, as many in the Mepharshim point out, Lo dai, I mean, this is Lashon the Metzudais, but many are aimed on this. Lo dai, sh'areyot ali, lo lechet na v'nad m'shotet ba'aretz, which, by the way, relates back to Yonah as well, because he's also a nitzutz of Kayin, who is na v'nad. That's merumas in this pasuk. And why was I nigram to be na v'nad ba'aretz? Al she'atzarti et hamatar. And according, again, to the Medrash, that's why he ended up in Tzarfat in the first place. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent him to that almanah. Those of you who learned Melachim with me will remember that old story. That he was sent there in order to feel the pain of the people in the street who had nothing to eat. And that's where he was supposed to learn to have rachamim and to rescind the gezerah that he had made against Israel. And he senses that this is because you disagree with me and you've put me through hell. And now, not bad enough that I should have to go through hell, but the very woman that I came to learn about how it is that I'm hurting others, you have to kill her child. Just to make it clear that nobody should even be nice to me, you know. V'hareyot alala amitet b'na b'avur zeh. Nobody will even let me into their house. I am like a walking plague. I mean, that means that he knew he was fighting HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But that's exactly what Yonah is doing. I mean, he's perfectly aware. But should you even kill her child? I understand that we're at war, me and you. And this when Achav says, O Cher Yisrael. He has a very good basis for saying, O Cher Yisrael. And Elio senses it and realizes it. This is an amazing story. So that means in the very source of the child's Yonah, Chiyut, in which he was brought back to life, which becomes now the makor of the whole Indian of Tchiyat HaMetim, which again, according to the Baalei Kabbalah, takes place over here. Because since Yonah was kovesh et nevuato, he was chayav mita bidei shamayim, and had actually died when they threw him into the yam. So that what we see here is really a recreation of a person. And therefore this entire absurd description of a fish and of a whole story in which he sees the Leviathan and he perceives the toe of the yam and so on and so forth is a vision of death, as he said. He himself calls it that. So he is essentially experiencing something outside of human experience. So that he comes to attach himself to his own shoresh in Elio. And that is very profound in terms of identifying him as Yonah ben Amittai. Why is he nogea the story of Yerovam? In amazing ways. First of all, when Elisha was given two jobs. He was supposed to be Mosheach et Chazael. And that was going to be a disaster. And he was also told to go ahead and to make Yehu ben Yehoshaphat, king, and to have him destroy everything that had been achieved by Ahav and his entire family. So it says there, Elisha Navi kara le'echad mibnei ha-nevi'im. ויאמר לו, חגור מתנך, קח פח שמן הזה בידיך, ולך רמות גלעד. Doesn't say who he was. Chazal identify him as Yonah ben Amittai, and that in fact all of the Nevi'ahs to Beit Yehu, all the way through here, this story of Yerovam Hashemi, and his telling Yerovam that he's going to be very successful. everything was done through Yonah ben Amittai. And that has got to be an extremely important insight, first of all, into his entire tefillah, because it means that his relationship to Yisrael was essentially a secular relationship. In other words, he did not expect the people that he was speaking to do teshuva. They never listened to him. They didn't do teshuva. And nonetheless, he was telling them, you're going to be unbelievably successful, which is really strange. And as we spoke about over there in Sefer Melachim, it says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, look, you know, I'm really not ready to destroy Klal Yisrael. They're not listening anyway. So what the heck? Why shouldn't they be successful? But that means that Yonah was the one who represented that entire approach. Now, if that's the case, it means that there's something very different about his relationship, the whole concept of teshuvah, and how teshuvah connects to what it is that we're meant to achieve with the success that we can have. So when he, Chazal, identified this boy, and he's a nar, he's constantly called Vayelech Hanar, Hanar Hanavi, Ramot Gilad. So now he is defined as a child, but he must have been very young, because, I mean, we are talking about a lifespan over here of well over 120 years, if he's going to be the one that we're identifying as the same individual who is dealing with Nineveh, depending on what point of Nineveh is dealing with. We'll see that we have hints. In any event, he is here an old man, and here he's a child. So what does he do? We're talking about a little kid. That he walks into Ramot Gilad, basically into the middle of a meeting of the top leaders of the country. And he just walks right in. It's a very strange situation. Like somebody walking into the, you know, Joint Chief of Staff's meeting, you know. And he walks in and he says, Tavar li elecha, sir. I have something I have to tell you, sir. So Yehu says, really? And which one of us would you like to speak to? Trying to be a little bit silly about the whole thing, as we'll see. So he says to him, El mimi kulam elecha hasa. You, sir. So he gets up. Vayakom vayavo abayta. Walks into the next room. Yona takes out Shemen, Vayitzor Shemen al Rosho, Vayom Elokeinu Amar Hashem Elokei Yisrael, Mishachtich Lamelech Alam Hashem al Yisrael, and Hikita et Beit Achav Adonecha, Venikamti Dmei Avadai HaNeviim. Note, Avadai HaNeviim, this is this whole story. This is what is going to be the Nekama for the way that Neviim had been treated. And Dmei Kol Avdei Hashem Yad Izevel. And therefore, this is the horrible Nevius. Ichrati l'achav mashtin bekir v'yatzuv v'azu b'Yisrael. V'natati et beit achav, achav kebeit yiravam benevat, v'chebeit ba'asha benachia, v'et izevo yochlu haklavim b'chelek Yisrael, and so on and so forth. Yehu walks out of the room, sits back down. V'ayom lo, they said, well, is everything okay? Hashalom. Why is this crazy guy come here? Ah, he says to them, you know him, he's crazy. What's the issue? You are lying. Tell us what he said. So he tells them what he said. ויאמרו ויקחו איש בגדו וישימו תחתיו וגרום המעלות ויתקעו בשופר ואם המלאך יהיו. המשוגע הזה, what the crazy guy come in here. The kid walks in, he's in the middle of a meeting and everybody stops and we try to sort of pass it off. Well, you know, you said to yourself he's crazy and so on. I mean, this is a very complex personality. Obviously they knew him. He says to them, you know him. He's a crazy guy. I mean, what do you mean? They know him. He's a Nar Anavi. What do you mean they know him? So what we see over here is a person who shows up right here in the first parak of immense presence and calm. And that's exactly what he turns out to be over here. But his shlichut is to restore the matzav of the nekama on this level of the Nevi'im. And there's a remarkable medrash that says, and why was Yeravam indeed given that kayach to restore Eretz Yisrael? Because he was mechabed Nevi'im. But as the Gemara says, not only that, but when they tried telling him Lashon Hara about Amos, and that Amos said this and this about Beit Yeravam, he said, listen, if that's what he said what HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him to say. He's doing his job. Tell him thank you. What's the problem? So the entire relationship of the success of Yeravam here is specifically in terms of his relationship to Nevi'im. Now we will see that in the closing, Yonah complains to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that I knew this was going to happen, and they are essentially going to start doubting the value of Nevi'im. So everybody takes that to mean, they'll accuse me of being a Navi Sheker, and I don't want to be accused of being a Navi Sheker. And as the Medrash says, he had gone before to Yerushalayim, and the Amei Haaretz had accused him of being a Navi Sheker because the city had been saved, because they did listen to him. This doesn't appear beferish in the Psukim, but they're Ramazim. So he didn't want to ruin his reputation. Obviously, once we see it in this context, he has a unique relationship to both Nevi'im and to Teshuvah, and that has to be taken into consideration in understanding him and the story here. So let's continue. Kum lech el Ninveh ha'ir ha'gedolah, and of course the Yir ha'gedolah, this is a reference all the way back to that original Ninveh. He ha'ir ha'gedolah. It wasn't clear there where it was Ninveh or Kalach. So the Gemara darshan, yes, but here it says Yair Gedolah, so obviously it was Ninveh from the beginning. Now there's something special about Ninveh in one of two directions, which is a Machlokas Rashi and Ramban, which actually is a Machlokas in the Midrashim as well. One, Rashi's pshat is that Min Ha'aretz Ahi Yatzah Ashur, and Ashur left Min Ha'aretz Ahi in order not to be part of Nimrod. Vayiven et Ninveh, in which case Ninveh became the symbol of the antithesis of Merida to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Based on that, says the Medrash, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was chas on Ninveh, and of course we know the famous Medrash that the Melech of Ninveh here is Paro Melech Mitzrayim, who was the grandson of Nimrod, the son of Nimrod, Nimrod according to other, but the point is that he was the one who understood Teshuvah, and therefore he becomes now the symbol of the nature of Teshuvah in Ninveh. Others learn, Ramban learns, that Vayiven at Ninveh means that Nimrod went and built Ninveh, and that Ninveh therefore became a makor of chait later, and was the antithesis of Yisrael, and was therefore used as a shevet connected Yisrael through Ashur. And indeed, some suggest maybe that's why Yonah didn't want to go to Ninveh. Because according to the Medrash, he went to Ninveh because Ninveh was going to be the Shevet B'yad Hashem Keneged Yisrael. And therefore everyone would say, so why is the evil city being given this power to chastise Yisrael? And therefore HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted them to be expressed in the world as a city of Teshuvah, so that that would justify their use against Yisrael later, which was exactly what it was that Yonah wanted to avoid. So according to this pshat, it was a politically motivated kind of thing, which related specifically to his understanding, Benavias, of what it was that Ninveh was going to be against Yisrael, and he didn't want it to be expressed as something that was good. Fine. All of these things obviously are going to have to all be absorbed into a unified approach to what it was that he was trying to do. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, get up. Get up seems to mean, I want you to do this right now. Ukra aleha. Now, it doesn't say what it is you're supposed to say. It just says, Ukra aleha. Ki altar le'atam lefanai. Things are getting bad over there. And of course, the same lashon we have by Sodom. That means that things are really bad. Vayokom Yonah livroch Tarshisha milifnei Hashem. So, he was kum, all right. It's kum lechale. Okay, up I go, and away I'm out of here. Vayakum yona. But this is so shocking that Rav Sadia Gaon actually suggests that, look, I mean, he certainly would have not ignored the tzivui from Hashem, and therefore, he actually probably did go to Nineveh that first time, but it didn't say exactly what he was supposed to say there, so, you know, he gave them some general mussar, read the Masilas Yesharim to them, you know, and so on. And then he came home and realized, you know, next thing you know, God's going to give them a whole tshuva plan, and that's going to be a disaster. I better get out of here before I get another Nevi'ut, because then I'll have to listen, and it's going to be effective, and I don't want to listen. And therefore, obviously, he's not running away from God. What a Navi thinks he can run away from God. But, as all of the Midrashim and the Zohar points out, Nevi'us is not following Chutzmort. Worse than that, says the Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer, the Yam is, by definition, the place of Tohu. It's not a place where you would expect the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to be shared. On the contrary, the whole Kayach of Moshe, that it was Nimsham in Amayim, is removed out of that Tohu, which meant that he was capable of dealing with what appears to be chaotic, unstructured reality. And therefore, that was his Madrega to give Terah. And you'll notice that the boundaries of the Yam are called secular. So the sand, which is the boundary of the Yam, has no specific identity, which is the opposite of Kedusha. So that it's just grains of sand. They're like the grains of sand, in which we do not see individuality on the gross level. And therefore, we call it Chol. So he wanted to go, this is according to Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer, that he wanted to go specifically to the Yam where the Kvod Hashem is not to be found, Kvod Hashem meaning the Gilui of the presence of Hashem. Or he wants to be in Chutz La'aretz, which Rashi brings over here, that he specifically went to a place, Hu b'Chutz La'aretz, Evrach l'sham she'en ha'shkinah shorah b'Chutz La'aretz. This is based on the Mechilta. The Mechilta says that was the whole point, and therefore, not that he thought idiotically he could avoid the Shekhinah, but he thought that he could avoid Nevi'ut. And therefore he ran away. The Ebenezer has a marvelous deal to show that that's the case. He says, look, if you take a look, Ashechipasti b'chol ha'mikra, I went through in the entire Tanakh, and I never found the word bricha, except in one context, it's always davuk to the word penei. Mipanecha evrach, vayivrach yiftach mipnei echad. It never says mipnei Hashem. It says milifnei Hashem every single time, both in his reference and when the sailors refer to it later on. And therefore, what it means is just like it says vayitzekai milifnei Hashem, and that's mipanecha esaser. So what it means is from the keach of the gilui of the Shekhinah, I want to be, so, which is Nevi'ut. But of course he never thought he was going to run away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, he wanted to be in a place where he would not have to give over this Nevi'ut. Now, obviously, there's a great deal missing in this story, and it's clear that there's something to do with his vision of what Teshuvah is. And as Rashi brings over here, he said, and this is based, too, on all of the Midrash, as I said, Haguyim Krovei Teshuvah. Again, people interpret that to mean, since they are Krovei Teshuvah, well, maybe, you know, the Sutnas and Mekatreg, who cares if they do Teshuvah, it's not difficult for them, and so on, you know, so therefore it'll be a Kitur on Yisrael. Obviously, if Goyim are Krovei Teshuvah, then we've got to deal with specifically the problem and the reason of why Goyim are Krovei Teshuvah and Yisrael is not Krovei Teshuvah. As a matter of fact, not only are they not Krovei Teshuvah, they're the antithesis of Krovei Teshuvah. So if there's an issue over here, to just pretend, well, that's the problem, everybody knows the Krovei Teshuvah, and that's going to cause a terrible kitruk to Yisrael without dealing with the underlying problem, it's crazy. And the fact that we're Koveya the Sonyom HaKippurim means that that nature of Teshuvah is what it is that we're going to have to explore over here in order to get more deeply into the Sefer. Okay, nice beginning. We have to run the talk. And so as the Ibn Ezra's Medayek, Vayokom Yona Livrot Tarshisha Milifne Adonai. So he's going to escape the Gilui of the Shechina. And perhaps in that sense he has to be willing, in order to do that, he has to be willing to cut off those parts of himself that are shayach to Gilui Shechina in going to Chutz Laretz. And because of that, we may find this three-pronged lashon of Yerida in the Pasuk. But Yered Yafo and in the next pasuk, vayeradim, which is also really a word similar to yered, vayeradim is really the loss of one's entire consciousness. But this may be a sense of his almost suicidal, and as the Michilta says, he went in order to die in the sea. It was with that understanding and with that intent, and he was going to be Moser Nefesh al Yisrael. So that's a possibility, but it changes, of course, the entire focus, because what it would mean is that he's not simply talking about doing something that's external in keeping away from the Shechina, but he's doing something to himself, a gradual Yerida, which in fact he sees as terminal. And that's exactly what they sensed in him. Something is wrong with this guy. We'll get back to that. But before continuing, I want to point out another fascinating relationship of why specifically would be Yonah that would have to do with all of this interrelationship with Nineveh, and in fact the only book in which there appears to be this shlichut to Goyim, in which the Goyim are supposed to be the ones that are going to express what it is that Teshuvah is about. Amazingly, Yonah is the only one who became a Navi, and this is the context of his own actual book, because the book describes at the end Yonah as making a sukkah. And that's the closing of the book. And of course, we read him as a transition at that last moment of Yom HaKippurim in Mincha. He's the transition to Sukkot. And it's his type of teshuvah that relates specifically to the Umot Olam. And it's in Sukkot that we have our parim that are being brought for the Shivim Umot and so on and so forth. So there's something about the universal in what it is that Yonah represents, not only as a book, but also in the segue into the coming holiday. Remarkably, Yerushalmi says, the Tosis brings this in Masechet Sukkah, Yonah became a Navi during Sukkot, at the Simchat Beit HaShoeva. So his sensitivity was, and most understand that to be, that's where this Navius was from. Was in the Simchat Beit HaShoeva on Sukkot, where there was the time of the commitment to the Umot Olam, but not only the commitment to the Umot Olam, but what is most amazing is that, of course, what the whole story of the Simchat Beit HaShoeva is about is the restoration of the primal human responsibility for nature. And that's how the book ends. He goes insane because his tree dies, and he says, I'd rather die. And that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu uses as his, so now you're good and angry, Yonah. Oh, yes. How angry are you? Well, I'm ready to die, so it said. So that means that the entire story of Yonah is wrapped up in his inception, every last aspect. And his, now what we're going to find, I'm allowing myself to refer to Pesukim later because everybody knows the book so well, but even in his falling fast asleep. I don't know. I don't recognize the number. I'm just going to turn off the phone. He does exactly what Elio does. Elio, when he runs away, and when Yzevel actually tells him, you know, and this is the revenge against Yzevel, it's this child that he was mechayel. So when Yzevel tells him, okay, you may have won the battle of the day, but tomorrow you'll be dead along with the rest of them. And it's that point that he gives up. There he goes, and it says he falls asleep underneath a rotan. And he just sort of throws it all away, which is exactly what happens here to the person who is responsible for taking the revenge on Yzevel for the loss of the Nevi'im. It's an amazingly complex story, all interwoven with itself, with where he comes from, with where his Nevi'is comes from, with how he views his self as being part of the nature of Nevi'ut, so that in running away from Nevi'ut, he doesn't see that as something external. It's not just that he's saying, okay, I'm ready to be most nefesh, I don't want God to catch up with me, I don't want that. It's that he understands that it's his essence as a Navi that is involved here. And that what it is that he stands for in his Navias has elements in it that are damaging to Yisrael and to Yisrael's mission. And therefore, obviously, ultimately, this may be the Ratzon Hashem. But Megalgalin Schus Ayadei Zakai, Megalgalin Chov Ayadei Chayav, and this is not what my life is going to be for. Now the question is, was he actually Kovesh Nevuato, which is the Mashmot of the Gemara in Sanhedrin? In which case he's Chayav Mita. The Malbim says, if you look at the original Tzivoy, all it says is Ukra Aleh. So we spoke about the way that the Reb Sadia Gaon says, okay, he did that, maybe. That's very, very chutzpah. We didn't bother telling you, but he did that. It was unimportant. But what the Malbim says is, but that's not a specific Nevi'ut. That means he's being sent on a mission. A mission is not Nevi'ut. This is Kralat. To say, Kralat advarim asher amarti lecha. Were you kovesh anything in particular? I sent you as a preacher to go out and to teach them. So why is that? That would not be called Kovesh Nevuato if he didn't have a specific Nevi'ut at all. But that actually is an even better approach than the Rav Sadia Gaon's approach in terms of the din of the Kvish. And so his tikuma is Livroach Tarshisha B'Lifnei Hashem. And so Vayered Yafo, some are Masber, why Yafo, for heaven's sakes? If he is the one who's from Gat Hefer, that's in Zvulun. He should have gone to Akko. What was he doing in Yafo? But if we understand that this was when he was coming from the Simchat Beit HaShoifah, so of course, that's where he would be going. He would be going to Yafo, which ties the whole thing together. And he finds an Oniya Ba'at Tarshish. I want to exactly say Ba'at Tarshish. You know, it's supposed to be going to Tarshish. Seems to be saying he was coming from Tarshish. And there's two explanations. The Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer says, this was the boat to Tarshish that had already taken off to Tarshish. It was forced to land, an emergency landing, when it hit a gigantic storm and was pushed back to Yafo. So there he was, arriving after the gate had already closed. His plane had taken off. He's turning around in misery. This actually happened to me. That's an amazing story. He's turning around in misery, and all of a sudden the gate opened up and the plane has come back. He says, oh my God, now I know Darki is Yeshara, because his work was helping me, and this is great. So Ba'a means that it indeed, it had been going to Tarshish, now it's pushed back from Tarshish. Others understand, no, that's exactly the point. This was the Tarshish ferry. So basically, he was going to have to wait, because it was just arriving. He was going to have to wait until departure time, which would have needed another 1,000 people getting on board, which was ridiculous. That's why it says, Vayitain sechara. He didn't pay his ticket. He rented the entire boat.
Wow.
Which is one of the riyas that a Navi has to be rich, and you don't give him the vias. There's even a medrash that talks about how much the fee of the boat was, with an enormous amount of money. And he pays for the entire boat, which of course explains why it is that everybody's focused on Yonah. In other words, it just seems like, okay, so one guy fell asleep in the hold, it's a big deal, you know. But no, this was the crazy guy that came in and paid for the whole boat. Where is he? So there's automatically a focus on this person. He's not a regular guy. So he takes a chara. Vayered balavo imahem tarshisha. Note that the yirida that is mentioned over here is the fact that he's going to be going with them. So there's, if you're normally on a boat which is full of passengers, you know, and there's the kosher kitchen and the whole business, and you know, so you feel like you're in the upper decks, you know. But over here he's with the crew. That itself is a yirida. But Benogea his sukkah identity, it's an amazing medrash. The medrash says that represented on this boat was an individual from every one of the shirim families. Which of course is sukkahs again. So these are the shivim parim. In other words, so this boat is a vision of sort of the entire earth, similar to the original Yonah that flew off of a boat just like that. Fascinating. A boat that had the entire remnants of humanity and all of the shivim umot come. And then here is this Yonah. And he is Yored Lavoy Mem Tarshisha Milifne Hashem. Once again, that means that the Bia Imahem was part of the Milifne Hashem. So the Yerida, in his entire status as a person, he was willing now to talk. He was willing now to relinquish, if this is what it would take to achieve whatever we have no idea what that is. Again, we're just. As a start, we're taking on the simple meaning of the Midrashim and of Rashi, and many of the Mefarshim will follow, that he was afraid of the Goyim being Krovei Teshuva. But just to put that seed in your mind of doubt, it's not just the Goyim are Krovei Teshuva. The story of Nineveh's doing Teshuva is hilarious. It's not the Krovei Teshuva. It's like it comes out, yes, another 40 days, and then, oh, okay, fine, we'll take care of it, thank you, and within 10 seconds, everything has changed and so on. Now, what? I mean, it's almost a joke. It's way too easy. It's not just a Krovei Teshuva. You know, they call up the king. You're kidding. That's what he said. There's a national emergency. Everybody must do Teshuva immediately. The animals have to do Teshuva. Dress them all up in black. I mean, the thing is, it's almost a joke. It's like they're going out of their ways to turn it into this hilarious kind of what Lamaisa. Oh my God. What Lamaisa is expressed in the. What was I saying? I lost track because of these interruptions. Which is Lamaisa dressed in Yerushalmi by Rish Lakish as being considered to be an absolute. Ramaut, the whole thing. Shuvash Ramaut. What kind of Shuvah is this? What do you mean? 10 seconds flat, the entire city is now full of tzaddikim, and everything is. There's something very fishy about it. It isn't just that they're Krovei Teshuva. We're doing something that is strange in calling this a reality and making it a reality. And it is such a slap into the face of what it is that he expects the Teshuva to be, and what it is that he wants it to represent, that therein must lie a hint of what is bothering him. He knows what is to come. It's not just the difference between, well, they'll manage to do it, and Klal Yisrael won't manage to do it. It's something about the nature of the Teshuva that's at risk here, and that's what we pointed out earlier has got to be the issue. Madonai hitil ruach gedola layam, vayi sa'ar gadol bayam. So we have here an image of HaKadosh Baruch Hu picking up the ruach and sticking it down. Hitil. So it's, he stuck it there. And therefore, there was a Sar Gadol Bayam. Why there needs to be two separate, I mean, he could say, Bashem Asah Sar Gadol Bayam. And there's a remarkable Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer on this, which says, which makes it very clear as to why it was that the sailors were convinced that this is a very personalized problem. And that is, it was an absolutely constrained ruach. All around them, boats were there, and everybody was out suntanning on the deck, and they're being splashed with the eye, and the whole boat is going up and down, and it's about to be destroyed, and everybody around them is looking, but what is going on over there? Right? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu picks up this ruach, and he's matil it right on them. They knew that something was funny. Gosh, even the boat started to think that it was going to be over. It's a beautiful image. To say the looked like it was over, but to use the word as if the boat is thinking about itself. But it's, there's this sense of really a teva here, in which the people and the boat and the experience of everything that's going on is all somehow linked together. And so the sailors were terrified. Each one of these Shivim Umayis had found their God. And they threw overboard all of the kelim that they had, all of the instruments they had in this onia, to make it lighter. And speaking of calm presence, and is there a problem? Now, Lamaisa, since it says V'yona Yarad, it doesn't say V'yarad V'yayered Yona. It's the Mashmaut is that, according to Shamshur Fal Hirsch, that this type of construct is always the pluperfect. So in other words, it means that it had been this way. He had gone down to Yarkatei HaSfina and had fallen asleep, because otherwise it would have been a slap at everybody's face. Okay, that's possible. But the contrast is so shocking. Everybody is terrified. You see the image here. Throwing things overboard, people screaming, yelling, holding on to the slashing waves, and this boat itself thinks it's about to be destroyed. And here goes a guy downstairs, and fast asleep, and everything is fine. It's a remarkable image. It is so remarkable that it explains the use of the word Vayikrav in the next passage. Vayikrav elav Rava Kovel. What does that mean, Vayikrav elav? What should you say? I mean, Vayikash elav, or Vayomer lo Rava Kovel. What the heck is wrong with you? Vayikrav has this gingerly sense of creeping up to him. Vayikrav elav Rava Kovel. Almost in awe. Like, whoa. Do I wake him? Can I talk to somebody like this? He's, my God, this is like a different presence. And we'll see that this becomes symbolic of the entire transformation that is about to take place in the boat because of Yonah. And so he is korev to him. He approaches him. Vayomalo, Malachan Yerdam. This is many different. I mean, what Malachan Yerdam could mean? What is with you that you are sleeping? Or, what's with you, the man who is asleep? And that's, Ulu Yesheni Mishratchem, V'nirdamim, V'tirdamatchem. So we're calling you a nirdam, meaning, have you no self-awareness? But of course, it could mean the opposite as well. It's like, what is going on in your mind that you could be sleeping? And as the Medrash puts it, we're holding on here between life and death. Ben ha-chayim u-ben ha-mavet. And you don't care? Doesn't it make any difference?
Just in terms of Yonah, he always seems to be between life and death. And this is...
not for the people who are watching.
No, but I'm saying it, it does seem to be that there's always something about Yonah that seems
yes,
to be in death already.
No, 100%.
I wish I was dead. I am dead.
And that's exactly what Eliyahu does, by the way.
Yeah.
It's enough, Shila Kachtar. You know, which, by the way, is not all that rare, because Moshe Rabbeinu says the same thing.
But it almost seems like it's not completely brought back to life by...
That could be that. When we get to that, we'll talk about it. Oh, you mean the original?
Yeah.
That could be that there's elements of death and death wish that are associated with it. We'll see when we get to the tefillah that he has. So the captain is shocked by this complete and total, what appears to be... I mean, we could say it's just pure despair. But it appears to be equanimity. And that's the way he's experiencing it, the Rav HaKovel. And it simply does not understand. Kum Kral Alecha. You should be calling out to your God. We're all trying. Ulai Yitashet Elohim Lanu Velonoved Yitashet. Yitashet sort of means put his thoughts to us. Eshtenotav. Has God lost his mind? We say somebody who's lost his mind. Ibed Eshtenotav. Yitashet is he'll wake up to our tzora, become aware of us, put his thoughts upon us. And therefore the inyan of tvila that they understand is to draw attention to oneself, which is exactly what they're doing. Vayizaku, they're shouting, which is exactly what Eliyahu had said to the Nevi'e Abal. Why don't you shout a little louder? Maybe he's sleeping. So you'll wake him up, and that's exactly what it is that the Rav HaKovel is saying. Ula yitashet, you know. You've got to get his attention. And that way, v'lo noved. Of course, is not exactly the way that Yonah views the whole idea of tefillah at all. It's very much the problems of teshuvah, the question of how they relate to God, what is tefillah all about to them, is immediately evident here, even at the beginning of the Sefer. Okay, let's continue our exploration of Yonah. So yesterday, we took the first steps in understanding who it was that Yonah actually is, and what he represents. And I'd like to look at some of the Makaris first, because there's absolutely no way to understand the entire idea of Yonah ben Amittai until we come to fully appreciate how he actually is, the Amittai aspect of Eliyahu that we spoke about yesterday. First of all, let us remember that the main point in the story of Eliyahu, and there's a diac here that, as far as I know, nobody has ever made. I haven't seen anybody's pirish on what exactly the reference to is at all. We know that the, you know, it's easier if we have a Tanakh. Would I be able to take yours? I'll just instead of reprinting. The main focus here is, as far as we've seen so far, is the problem that he has with calling for the tshuva of Nineveh. There's a very, very important reason why this is the essence of his life. It's not a small issue at all that leads him to this. Remember the story of how it is that Eliyahu reaches the end of his life. And remember also that Eliyahu reaches the end with an actual appreciation on his own, which he articulates for the first time, according to the Rishonim, the fact that he realizes that he is Pinchas, and that he's coming now, Kanokineti Lashem, and so on and so forth, and this is exactly what he stands for. I'm going to print out another one, if you don't mind, which you'll bring to me, okay? Sorry, I didn't realize that we had done so little yesterday. So let me read it to you. We know that the beginning of the story is a story of tshuva. Eliyahu essentially brings the entire Klal Yisrael together in the only time that such a thing was ever attempted, an attempt to completely change the way that Yisrael would be mityaches to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to the whole concept of Avodah Zarah, presents to them for the first time the actual option, and he says to them, Im Hashem hu Elokim, luchu acharav. But if not, Im Abal hu Elohim, You have to make it. You're going to have to make a determination and a choice of what it is you guys want to do with your lives. This is not going to work. We've been playing games too long. And so we have this amazing, which seems to be earth-shattering change, in which everybody together sees the complete bitul of the Baal. 450 Nevi'im of the Baal are killed on the spot. Everything is torn apart. They rip down the temple of the Baal, burn everybody alive. They finally realize it's all over. This is a joke. We're never going to come back to this again. Ezeel, who has killed the Nevi'i Hashem, hears about this horrible story, to her a horrible story. But Tishlach Ezeel Malach, I said, what happens over there is the whole Am comes, Vayikshu Kol Am Alav, Demarapeh, the Mizbeach Hashem Arus, he takes 12 Avanim, Kimspar Shiftei Bnei Yaakov, Asher Hayad Dvar Hashem Elav, Lemor Yisrael Yeshemecha, Vayivnet Avanim Mizbeach Hashem Hashem, and so on. And they destroy the Baal, and Vatishlach Ezeel Malach, Koyasun Elohim, the Koyasifun. Now, the whole country is in an uproar, basically. Everybody is there. They see what a phony Ezeel is, what a phony everything that she stands for is, and she guarantees him, tomorrow you're dead. Vayar is the text word. Vayar, vayokom v'yelech al nafsho. Vayar means he realized she was right. This must have been one of the most shocking conceivable moments for Elio, and it's this moment that pushes him over the edge. He realized that it is possible to get people to do shuva in a way that is completely and totally meaningless, and it will last 24 hours if, despite the fact that it resulted in the lives of hundreds of people murdered, and it was such a massive change, buildings were destroyed, cities were torn apart, everybody has a new vision of life for less than 24 hours. Okay, it's machar, by tomorrow at this time, promises Ezeel, you're dead. Nobody will protect you. I'll just come and kill you the same way I killed all the other Nevi'im. Well, up until now, we've had a certain respect for Elio. You've gone over the line. I will not accept this behavior anymore. And then it says, Vayokom, Vayelech al nafsho, Vayavo per sheva shel Yehuda. At least he's in Yehuda, he's not directly under Ezeel. However, as before, should explain, it wasn't enough. He realized that she'll get him there anyway. So what is this Rav? So the Mefarshim explained, Rav is that, you know, I've lived an extraordinary amount of time. I've been osek in attempting to bring the Gaul. That, after all, is my job. I'm Pinchas. And enough. It's clear to me. It's clear to me that I cannot do any more in this identity. So even though, just because I have a right to be liskot l'orach haniflam min ha'chayim, there's no point in this. Ravata nechavim li yamay l'merubim ein li chefetz behem. I have absolutely nothing to do, and because of that, I'm tired and I don't want to do this. Hoel vani ata betzar. I have nothing else to do in this identity. And the Mefarshim speak out that this element of me is over. So that even when a miracle happens and comes along a mala, provides him with this miraculous achila, and he's going to be able to go arboim yom on this achila alone, he comes on that keach of arboim yom to the same exact place where Moshe Rabbeinu was in arboim yom. To exactly the same cave, to the same Ma'ara, HaKadosh Baruch Hu had answered Moshe's prayers with the Yud Gimel Midas and Arin Yinat Kvadecha, and covering it over, so you would be only Royat Acharai, and so on and so forth. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to him, okay, why are you here? We've had 40 days to think this over. Why are you here? And he says, I'm here because Kano Kineti Ladonai Laitzvaot, Azvu Berit Chaben Yisrael, Nevi'echa Hargu Bakarev, Ve'avaterani Levadi, Ve'avkshadam Filakachtan. I don't want to kill me too. I'm the last one that stands for anything. So we have the whole story and a tremendous Ruach Gedolah V'Chazak Mifarei Karim, which the Medrash compares to the storm of Yonah. Perhaps is in front of him. The only other storm that was of such intensity, of Ayatel Hashem, which was the storm that was only on that boat of Yonah, and the storm that was on Eliyahu, and the storm that was on Iyov, which was only on his house. Again, after the Rash comes an immense display of fire and earthquakes and so on. Every time HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, okay, why are you here now? He says, I'm here. Repeats himself again, I'm here for the same reason. He hides his face. Malach HaKo Eliyahu. Repeats exactly the same words. Kano kineti l'Hashem lokei tzvakot. Azvu britcha b'nei Yisrael. Mizbuchotecha harasu. Niliyecha hargu b'chorev. Ivatera nilvadi. V'yavakshu et nafshi l'kachta. Word for word what I told you before. I'm unimpressed. This is why I'm here. I asked you before. Tachat harotam. I told you I'm finished. I'm retiring. Says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you are hereby retired. Ba'atam ashacht et chazeh l'melech al Aram, et Yehu ben Nimshi t'mshach l'melech Yisrael, Elisha ben Shephat me'evon b'cholat t'mshach l'levitach techa, and then you're finished. Fine. Before he goes out to the Midbar, and he leaves Yehuda, there is a very strange couple of words. So it says that he's in Midbar Yehuda, Vayanach et Naharosham, V'hu alach b'amidbar, derech yom, v'eshev tachat rotem b'achar. There's only one nar that Eliyahu had. Hanavi, hanar. Hanar, hanavi. That was referred to yesterday. That was Yonah ben Amittai. V'yanach et naharosha means that Yonah was meant to be the continuation of Eliyahu's work. However, the difference between him and Eliyahu is that the essence of Pinchas was the Yichud of Yisrael, and the Kano Kineti specifically to the Yichud of Yisrael. And that's Haboel Aramit, Kanarim Pogimbar, nothing to do with sex, everything to do only with identity. That's why it's only Boel Aramit, which is maybe not even us, according to many Shitas. Not Arayot, but the fact that you are willing to copulate and risk reproducing together with an Aramit. That's complete violation of what it means to be Yisrael, Baal Bat El Nechar. As the Gemara puts it, that's what I stand for. Remarkably, as we saw yesterday, Yonah comes from the Sukkah, the Sukkah Space HaShoeva, is here in a teva filled with Shivim Nafesh, similar to the original Yonah. He's supposed to be mayor to Yisrael. That's why Yisrael is called Yonati, in which the Medrash points out it's very similar, just like the Yonah was made the Yor Elo Elam from the teva, so too Yisrael is meant to be made the Yor Elo Elam. Other than that, the things that he is concentrating is, as we saw yesterday, Teshuvah, Gevius. For Eliyahu to be told at this point, so to speak, that his Na'ar is the one that is supposed to justify a Teshuvah that is a joke, which makes even the Teshuvah that took place on the Hashem Hu Elohim, Hashem Hu Elohim, which is good enough for us to repeat every Mitzvah Yom Kippur, the words that Klal Yisrael said to Eliyahu, which lasted less than 24 hours. And so that's the big bang on Mitzvah Yom Kippur. That means that the hachana to those words through the reading of Yonah is not accidental. So what Yonah is called upon to justify is a teshuvah that is even more absurd than that one. And the pasuk goes out over here to show its absurdity. It doesn't pretend to seriousness. It's understandable, therefore, that what is troubling Yonah is he too is saying, you want my life? I'm ready to give up my life. In exactly the same way that Eliyahu, the one who gave me life, was ready to give up his life. The only difference is, of course, is that the reason that Yonah is who he is because, as we saw yesterday, he's identified as the part of Eliyahu that was meant to bring Geula, specifically as Mashiach ben Yosef. And Eliyahu says, I know that I was supposed to be Yosef in Geula, I've done my best. It is not my time anymore, there's nothing more I can do with my approach. Okay, so who's the other approach? Mashiach ben Yosef. Mashiach ben Yosef, always, the difference between them, was always, between Yosef and Yehuda, was always in terms of the relationship to Umot Olam. His ability to deal with Shivim Umot, to speak, the Shivim Lashonot, the Sfat Lo Yadati Yeshma, the Olachona for Yitziat Mitzrayim, the being able to deal with each person on their level, which is exactly what it is that Yonah goes out to do here on this boat. That's exactly the difference between them. But the goal, ultimately, the tachlis that both of them have, is the achievement of Geula. So that's why it says in Mishnas Rebbe Eliezer, Yona is Shakul Ke'Elio. It doesn't mean that he was on the Darga of Nevius, that he was the Ish Elohim the way Elio was. It means he's Shakul, that is to say, his Avodah is the Avodah of Elio. That the entire book should revolve around specifically three issues that are so related here. And that is the nature of teshuva and a teshuva, which seems to be almost in the lashon, as I mentioned yesterday, Veshlakish, Yerushalmi, Ramaut, on the one hand. The nature of Nevi'ut, and whether Nevi'ut has to be respected, which was part of Elio's life. Elio, Ish Elohim, oh yeah? In Ish Elohim, ani, go to hell, burn up. Every single time anybody would say that to him. Until finally the poor guy comes and says, I don't mean any harm. Please don't eat me. It's like straight out of you know, these comic books, you know, bowing down to the ogre. I don't mean, I just need to say this and please don't be angry. You know, but Lamaisa, the sense that someone would tell a Nevi Hashem and Ish Elohim, Hamelech Omer Rei. And this is exactly what it is that he's not ready, Yonah's not ready to tolerate. The vision that Nevi'ut can be laughed at because a Nevi'ut L'ra'ah doesn't have to happen turns me into a preacher. I'm not interested in being a preacher. That's what a Nevi Hashem is not. And then we have the question, b'chol, of the relationship of how it is that the Umot Olam and Yisroel interrelate. It happens to be that on Sukkot, what comes out of the sukkah with the Shivim Purim, which is the Shivim Lishonos, which is the support for the Umot Olam, as the Zohar points out, is done in only one way. I mean, the Gemara says this, but the Zohar says it's the only solution. And that is, the mitmatim v'hochim. In other words, the whole way that the support of Yisrael is for the Umot Olam is the recognition that it can't continue this way for long. So that in Shemini Atzeres, the Gilui of Shemini Atzeres is the difference between the Uma Yechida, and that's why there's only one part, Kenegah the Uma Yechida, and the way that all of the involvement in making the world work up until now has been only for that ultimate purpose, which is in the end, that bringing of Geula. And this, by the way, explains why it is that the Pasuk makes such a fuss, which seems completely out of place. They went and they rebuilt the Mizbeach, and Elio takes 12 stones to rebuild the Mizbeach, and those 12 stones were connected to 12 Bonim of Yaakov, and they are the ones that HaKadosh Baruch Hu changed the name to Yisroel. Now is the time when I'm supposed to know that. And so it's clear that the whole point of it is that the initial relationship is the relationship to that lower level of Yisroel, in which you had the separate Shvatim and their identities of the Bnei Yaakov that had not yet reached the Darga of Yisroel. And that's even his Lashon Rav, he says, and that's basically the Lashon of Yaakov Avinu when he discovers Yosef. Rav, okay, enough. Now Yosef can take over. That's exactly the same word that he says here. And that reconstruction of Yisroel that's to come out of there is what he thought was going to come out of his Mizbeach. In the end, it needs to come out of Yonah. And we see the first step of the process in that here. But it becomes so clear once you understand where Yonah sees himself as coming from. What it was that he was meant to take care of. And those were exactly the things that Elio had said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu before he died. He said, something has to be done about the way the Nevi Hashem was treated. Something has to be done about the Afaras HaBrit. Something has to be done about the rebuilding of the Mizbeach. And I'm not ready to be Mavater on that. And as we pointed out yesterday, it was war. It was clearly HaKadosh Baruch Hu was telling him, you're wrong. So, well, if I'm wrong, then somebody else has to do the job. I can't do the job. This is me. Yonah does exactly the same thing. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, this is where you're going to go. As the Mechilta says, I have to be Moser Nefesh, that shouldn't happen. The only difference is that remarkably, and this is something that is unique, all of the Nevi'im, that we have a record of the onset of the Nevi'is, argued with HaKadosh Baruch Hu very bitterly. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu to be a Navi. 7 days he has to argue with him until finally it's, you're going to do what I tell you. Now go. Same thing happens with Yirmiyo. This is basically the way in which the definition of Nevi'ut is specifically not to be a preacher. The definition of Nevi'ut is to be involved in the solution. HaMechaseh Ani Mi Avraham, No, I will tell him. Ki lo yaseh Hashem lo kim davar kin gilat sodo la'avadav ha'neviim. Ha'mechaseh ani me'avraham. After all, he is going to be the Avraham Goyim. Ayo yiyeh. Sodom, therefore, is his. I have to let him know about it if I'm going to destroy it. Well, that's exactly what's happening here. He's telling me. I don't have to tell anybody, but I don't do anything unless I share it with my Nevi'im, which the Eben Ezra uses to show that the whole point of Nevi'ut cannot be like Rashi, that it's a preacher of a Lashon Nivs Ratayim. It has to be a Lashon of friendship and Re'ut and so on, with whom I share my secrets. So that's what's happening. Could have destroyed Nineveh without saying a word, but I don't do things without discussing it. What happens when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Megala to Avram about Sodom? A drastic battle in which Avram Avinu feels he's risking his life. Please don't be angry. Exactly the words that they say to Yirmiyahu. Please, I don't mean any harm. And I'm just making this suggestion, and I think that it's terrible what you do. What are people going to say about the way that you act? And indeed, this is what Ellen Miller says later. You know? Oh, yeah, he has a reputation of killing people. The Rishaim and the Tzadikim together. Yeah, same thing over here. This is an old reputation. This is a chilul. Says Yonah exactly the same thing. This is a chilul. The only problem is he doesn't say it. Now that doesn't make any sense. All of the Nevi'im spoke out what their problem was. He doesn't say a word to anybody. As we saw, it's almost funny. Vayakom says, "Kum." Okay, Vayakom. He goes somewhere else, the opposite direction. So the most striking aspect that violates the whole structure that we're used to of the Nevi'ut and the relationship of Nevi'ut is the fact that he acts without speaking about. Keeping all this in mind, let us continue and note how immensely powerful his not saying anything is, at least to the people on the boat. So we saw yesterday that the captain approaches him very gingerly, because it doesn't make any sense that somebody should be in this kind of situation and be sitting there with such total equanimity that he can fall asleep. Not only fall asleep in a storm-tossed boat, but fall asleep as the captain tells him, "Well, are you crazy? Here we are, anachnu amdim ben amavat ben achayim," as we said yesterday, "and you don't seem to think that that's important. How could that not be important?" And as we saw yesterday, Ulai Yitashet Elohim itself is a remez exactly to the words that Elio told in the Nevi'ei Abal. "Well, why don't you scream louder and you'll wake him up?" And that's exactly what, you know, everybody's calling Ish Le'elohav, which is each one of the Shivim Lishonos. Nothing helps. Okay. We don't see that he responded. He wasn't Kro Elohav. And all that we see after that is Pasuk Zayin. So as we saw yesterday, the Medrash tells us that they did not see this storm as a natural event, because it was absolutely ridiculous that only one boat should be storm-tossed when all around them people are drinking martinis and taking sunbathing classes. So it was clear something strange is going on. And so, vayapilu goralot. And as the Medrash points out, goralot does not mean goral, goralot. Because, obviously, to do one goral, two gorals, three gorals, I mean, it's got to fall on somebody. You know, if there's only 100 people or so people. So, okay, there's always 1% that will keep falling on the same guy. So they kept doing it again and again and again. Always came out exactly the same way. So that the entirety of the goral, from beginning to end, was always Yonah. So that's crazy. And so, vayomru elav, they start to talk to him. And they say to him, "Hagina na lanu." The simple meaning, Bashelem Yara Azot Lanu, is an identification. You, who is the one because of whom we are suffering, all of us. However, the way in which the Mefarshim and the Midrashim understand it, Vayom Reilam, Hagida Nalonu Basher Lemi Hara Azot, Lemi means to whom did you sin? What did you do that made you responsible like this? And it's a little bit strange that, I mean, you'd think that their first reaction would be to pick him up and throw him overboard. You know, if we did the Gorolo, that he's the problem, and all the other boats are perfectly happy. What in the world has all of a sudden changed in them, where these were the people that we spoke about in the opening of the story, in which he is going downhill the whole way, Vayered, he's going to be Imahem, and all of a sudden, he's not with Imahem. Not only the captain's afraid of him, they're all afraid of him. So they're asking, please, they're about to sink, please, I need a nalan. This is not a place to say please. It teaches us that the whole setting was so strange. They're speaking to him with respect. They are trying to indicate that he must have done something wrong, but they don't want to say it. So they're merames to it. You know, limi. I mean, you know, maybe it wasn't your fault. Maybe, you know, may ayin tavo. Maybe your city has a curse. You know, it wouldn't be your fault. Maybe it was your malacha. Maybe you overcharged. Maybe you know, something in your rashi goes shema pashata b'mnunatcha. You know, maybe you didn't do a good job on somebody's car when you fixed his brakes or something. And ma'artzecha. Maybe it was a psak din on your entire land was meant to be destroyed. Maybe your nation was chayte, and so on. But yomer alehim ivri anochi. So ivri anochi are very, very pregnant words, because ivri anochi means kol olam kulo be'ivrecha be'ivre hashini. So the first thing that he says to them is, I'm not like you. Don't try to apply your morality and your thinking to me. It has nothing to do with any of that. I don't have any local gods, so it's something with who my country is, where I come from, and so on. This is about everything. Nothing like you think. And it's not about my having done something wrong. It's about my fearing the Lord. This terrified. Until now, they were frightened. They were frightened of drowning. Now, remarkably, they're not frightened of drowning. They're frightened of a nightmarish situation in which they are caught between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and somebody who is saying he's yoreh him and is clearly fighting him. I mean, it's like the worst possible nightmare. Mela, you know, if it's a nice religious kind of issue, you know, you did something wrong, say you're Ave Maria, so everything will be okay. And in other words, he's dealing with the Iker issue right here in front of him. Don't give me this garbage. This is not about religion. This is about Hashem Elokei Hashem Ayim Lawrence. That's what it's about. It's about creation. It's about the purpose of creation. So before, when they were afraid, it says in Pasukei before, it says Vayiru Hamalachim Vayizaku Ishel Elohav. Here it's not Vayiru, it's Yirah Gedola, which is completely new madrega. It's astounding that these people, who were low class servants basically, have become more powerfully impacted, more terrified by the fact that somebody should be Doreach from HaKadosh Baruch Hu than they are about their imminent demise in a storm-tossed boat. But it's a Pella. In other words, it's what he is that has made this impact on me. He hasn't said a word. They're no longer asking, what did you do? They're asking, how could you have done this? How could you have done this? You were just going to church kissing Yoshka Pipik, and you're asking me, how could you have done this? Unbelievable story. What an awful piece of editing. Oh my God. That is just ridiculous. Oh, but I forgot to tell you that he had told them. That's why they said that. The Bible critics, it's unbelievable. The Bible critics all insist that this was a marginal note of one of the Mepharshim that put it into the Pasuk, because it's so awful that it's got to be. It is astounding. And I think that this Pasuk is a key. It's a key to understanding everything. He told them without saying a word. That's the point. Now, Halo Shamat Biti. Did you not hear? Tziviti etanarim shalolim mingoy. I never said. What? How was I supposed to hear something you never said? Were you listening? Then you would have heard. That's exactly what it's saying here. He told them everything that he had done up until this time. His equanimity. What it was that he said when they asked him, have you done anything? Where are you from? And his clear-cut description of himself as an Ivri and a Yorei Hashem, who was Oysa Shamayim Oren, who shared it on the Yam and the Yabasha, they understood that he's telling them my silence doesn't change who I am and where I came from. I don't pray. This is the way I want it to be. Are you crazy? What is wrong with you? What are you doing? So we're going to get caught up in an impossible drama. There's nothing we can do. Somebody like that, we're going to throw him into the sea. That's all we need. For sure, that's the end. That's death for all of us. That's hell, eternal hellfire. Who knows? Now we can't do anything. We're doomed. But it's no longer a personal doom. It's a sense of an existential hopelessness. Heaven only knows what's in store for people that get caught up in something like this. This is beyond anybody's imagination. It's a nightmare. And all this takes place within moments. The question is, so why is it? Is this true? Klapi HaKadosh Baruch Hu world? And I have nothing to say to him. Why aren't you praying? Because I have nothing to say to him. What does that mean? I have nothing to say to him. I suspect very strongly that, very similar to Moshe Rabbeinu, who said, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, go speak to Paro, he said, I have nothing to say to him. And you know, I got makom l'dvarim. But that's exactly the nekudah here. Because the question was the complexity of Yisroel versus the simplicity of the Umas HaElam. What is your problem, God, that Klal Yisroel doesn't do teshuva and the Goyim do? Why do you think that's true? Do I have to spell it out to you? Why do you think it's true? Because teshuva to them means something that is earth-shatteringly real, goes back to my Sibirachius, is part of the hay with which you were buried the Olam, is a recognition of the centrality of a process that is historical in its nature, that leads to Geula, that is not a little game of me trying to get out of my troubles. And these guys here, they're in trouble. It takes them 10 minutes to fix everything up, and it means absolutely nothing, and it's pure Ramaut, and this is what, I mean, please. Do you want a Navi? Am I supposed to say this to you? The murkavut, the complexity of Yisrael, is beyond words. That's the point. If you want to talk to me as a Ben Yisrael, you want to give me a tzivui as a Ben Yisrael, do so. If you want to figure me out, Mistorin is the symbol, says the Medrash, of Bnei Rachel. A Mashiach Ben Yosef has nothing to say. The Eben that was Mesamel Binyamin, who was the carrier of that, is the Yoshben. Why? Yesh Lem Peh, and they don't say anything. Yesh Peh, Yosh Peh, and they're silent. And that's exactly what he is doing over here. You wish to figure me out? Figure me out. You know what it takes to figure out a Ben Yisrael? The whole length of what it takes to develop Ben Yisrael. Thousands of years. Figure it out. If your problem is that I don't want to go and get involved in this type of teshuva, it's not a problem that can be discussed. It's perfectly clear. That's my position. Silence. What's yours? And this is exactly what they pick up. Ki yigidlehem. You don't have to say a word. Ki yigidlehem. In an amazing turnabout, here they are, their lives about to end, all because of this madman. And they say to him, is there anything we can do to you to stop this? So you see that they understand this is out of our hands. It's totally out of our hands. We don't know what we're dealing with. Do you have any ideas? Is it something that we could do? Of course. He says, what's the problem? Pick me up, throw me into the arm. What, are you crazy? No, never. Why not? But there's all of a sudden so makbid on his life. But this, look at the words here. Vayomru elav, ma na'aseh lach v'yishtok hayam yalinu. It's getting worse and worse from minute to minute. Isn't it obvious? So what's obvious? If you pick me up and throw me, you're asking, Yam's got nothing to do with you. This is about me. You're caught up in a drama that you're not supposed to be part of. As a matter of fact, according to the Maal, it's very interesting. The reason that he paid the entire steerage of the ship was in order that no other passengers would get on and have their lives endangered. Because he knew what was going to happen. Others learned that, why does it say he went down the Yar Kitei? And why did he go all the way deep down into the boat? Because he figured when the boat starts to crack up, he'll drown first. Then the others will be safe. He was perfectly aware. That's a very calm statement. Isn't it obvious? You guys are complaining and you think you're caught up. Why are you caught up? You want to cut up? Because I'm in the same boat as you are. If I'm not in the same boat, then none of you are in the same boat. So we're all okay. So you just pick me up and throw me into the Yama. I don't have a right to kill myself, but you have a right to save yourselves. Very calm, halakhic dissertation, you know? By the way, it's not so posh. There are those who learn halakhically that the Vayipol Gora Lot was the only reason that they had a right to throw him into the Yama. Because normally, you don't have a right to take a Ben Yisrael and to give him over, even if everybody's life is in danger. So, no, we're in the middle of Shir. So therefore, they needed to first establish that there was absolutely Min HaShamayim. It was given to them to recognize. It says, Elohim King of Chayev Misa.
He has some business, but he was.
Exactly. Unless he's Chayev Misa, like Sheva ben Bichri, and so then you can give him over. So they wanted to go around low to define that he was, in fact, the one that was being raided to them. So it's that there really are implications to their own sense of morality and what is doable. Okay. So they're very, very hesitant now. So they've become, from a bunch of sailors, they've become lamdonim already, you understand. Being yore yira gedela. From which the Tanhuma says, you see from here, says the Medrash, very strange Medrash, you see from here, that yira is greater than any chachma and bina. Because it says, vayira anashim yira gedola. What is that supposed to mean? V'chein amar shlomo, sov davar kol nishmat, Elohim yira, what is that supposed to mean? The meaning of the Medrash, I believe, is that these were people who understood nothing, but they could see what's in front of them. And that means that Yira is a petach to people that don't even understand what they're seeing, but are naturally capable of responding to something that shouts out. So they were even able to understand the entire situation. He gave them a hand. As far as they're, he might as well have spelled it out for them, like you spell it out for a 2-year-old. They didn't need any spelling out. Yira is greater than all the chokhmah in the world. That's what the members are saying. So the fact that you take this seriously and that it impacts you, you don't need to be smart for that. You need simply to care about what's going on around you. Yes?
When they say, instead
of what? From under? The only reason that you are suffering this is in order to get me thrown into the Yam. That's all that it's about. So why don't you just go ahead and do it? Is that saying? In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to kill me with this. That's not the point. It's you are being called upon to throw me into the Yam. That's the point. I'm not telling you a way to save yourselves. I'm saying this is why it's Aleichem, in order for you to understand the obvious. God is calling upon you to get rid of me. Something that I can't do myself. How convenient. They don't want to do this. They can't. They try even harder. The harder they try, the worse things get. Vayikra'u el Adonai vayamru ana Adonai. He didn't use the shame of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Until now they've been praying Ish le'Elohav. All of a sudden they don't know from Elohav. They're talking directly to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Al na novda benefesh ha'ish hazeh v'yatitena leinu dam naki. Because in all intents and purposes for us, vis-a-vis us, it's dam naki. Ki ata Adonai kasher chafatzta asita. You did all of this. So the Medrash says, they tried everything, meaning they lowered him into the Yam. So he stuck his toes into the Yam. The storm stopped instantly. Says, they pulled him back. Back to full force. So they lowered him halfway, you know. Quiet, calm. The martinis are back on deck. Pulled him back out. There doesn't seem to be any option. Well, obviously, the message was clear. And so finally, Vayisu et Yonah vayatilu el hayam vayamod hayam nizak. They picked him up, threw him into the Yam, and the Yam immediately stopped all of the storm. Vayira'u ha'anashim yira'a gedolah d'Adonai. This time the level of Yira is directly to the Shem Hashem. asked them, nobody knows Zevach. How in the world can you make a Zevach Lashem? First of all, Goyim don't bring Zevachim. They bring Olot, according to the way we pass. Not supposed to bring Zevachim. So what could possibly be a Zevach as an Ola? Zevach Ola.
I thought they
just said they bring Olot. I meant Shlomim. I said Olot, I meant Shlomim. Zevach is a Shlomim, but Zevach is a Shlomim. But, as the Medrash points out, there is a Zevach that Goyim bring. And that is specifically Korte Briti Ale Zevach. What it means is that in the same way we view Brit Milah as being a korban, to be called Sandekot, and so on and so forth, it means that they were Megayim on the spot. So that they all had a Brit Milah, Vayidru Nedarim, and they made a neder that they would come in front of a peasant, they would bring their children, and Medrash says they would bring their children and their family. And they would all give up their Avodah Zorah, and we'll see later on in the Tefillah of Yonah, the Remez, some learn that it was Merumas before, when it says they threw everything overboard, was that in the end they threw overboard all of the Avodah Zorah, Ish et Elohav, that they had taken along with them, that was the first thing that went. So this was an amazing moment, because he is coming now to fight against a teshuva that isn't real, saying that the only thing that is real is the presence of Yisrael with all that it takes to bring that up, refuses to speak about it, and in doing so has made his point. He didn't need to say anything, he didn't need to talk to them about what they should do, he just needed to be who he was, Kehi Gidlahem. And that was sufficient to be more impactful upon them than anything that they had ever seen before. They were more frightened of him, far more than they were frightened of dying in the storm. That's the difference between Yirah Gedolah, and before it was Yirah Gedolah Tashem. A Yirah Gedolah versus a normal Yirah. And so,
is
Yirah Gedolah related
to this?
Sebra Gedolah? Probably. So, we are left at the end of the first parak with what appears to be, and from their point of view, the death of Yonah. As far as they're concerned, it's thrown into the Yam. Yonah is gone. The Yam is quiet. They realize that there's no way to escape. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he was being Boreach, obviously being Boreach from the years, and that he ended at that point. L'maisa, we saw yesterday that in a sense he did actually end at that point. And the way that the Balei Kabbalah take it, and Ramazim and the Birkei Rabbi Eliezer as well, is that for all intents and purposes, this was classic Yonah. Yonah was someone who is born and dies, and then is born and dies, and then is born, such that the Abar Manel even explained that the Lashon Avar in the Tefillah of Yonah, in the Kol Mishparecha V'Gan Lecha, and coming down into the Sheol and so on, is a reference to his first experience of dying and coming back to life. Because as we mentioned, there are many before we say it's the pluperfect, or the prophetic past, which a Navi is able to speak about what is coming as if it already happened, because the vision of the Vias, it's as if it already took place, which the Gemara speaks about in various places. But that's how the Avraham Avinu learns. No, he's talking about his experiences, which he's now accessing in this experience, which is now the beginning of Perek Sheni, which begins a completely different element in the book. And you see. So that it is here that we go into the supernatural, into visions of matter not part of this world, visions from the grave, so to speak, visions of the future, visions of the Livyasan, visions of the placement of this very Bris Milah that ended the closing of the first parent, becomes central to the relationship of the Livyasan and the next parent, which ends with the Shavua that he himself makes, Yonah, as we'll see from the Medrash, that he will be the one that will achieve the Hakrava of the Livyasan Lifnei Tzadikim Lati Dava, which brings us, of course, right back to his Sukkah. And that turns out to be central in understanding the revolution in his thinking after the next parak, and understanding his tefillah, the Ramazim of that tefillah, which Bezrat Hashem, we shall do tomorrow.